Hello and welcome to the Brady Bros Boston Sports Podcast, where we cover everything in the Boston sports world. My name is James Brady, and still somewhere across the world for 24 more hours, my brother Nicholas. Say hello.
Hello, everybody. Today is Saturday, December 21st, and this is episode 39, and it's not 24 hours anymore. Well, what time is it there?
8:14 a.m.
14 hours till I leave. When I get home, I don't really know.
So, oh, yeah, that's... Okay.
Pretty close, actually.
Yeah, it's a little more than 24 until you get home, but...
Tomorrow, basically.
Tomorrow, yes. Tomorrow as we're recording this, to be fair, because this is a thing you can listen to anytime, and tomorrow might not be the same tomorrow we're referring to. Anyways, we'll get this show on the road, talking about the Red Sox. Not a lot has happened. We've signed or agreed to contract terms with a left-handed pitcher, Martin Perez, and a shortstop, Jose Peraza. Other than that, I don't really know if anything's happened. I don't think so.
I saw one thing on Twitter, so take that as take it with a huge grain of salt. That there were supposed like preliminary trade talks about Mookie Betts with the Dodgers.
I have also seen that. I saw a deal that I think it was someone on MLB Network came up with, and it was sending Mookie and David Price to the Dodgers in return for a bunch of players that I've basically never heard of, and I was the most against doing this deal. I just didn't think it was worth it at all. We got like four or five guys in return and maybe some prospects, but I just don't think it's worth it to send Mookie Betts and David Price to a team that made it to the World Series
two years in a row,
and then was the best team in the regular season this year. I think you gave them that kind of talent. That might push them over the edge. Granted, you almost talk about having too much talent on your team, but I don't know. I'm not really for dealing both Mookie and David Price to the same place unless we get everything we want out of that deal.
I'm really not for dealing Mookie in general. I get that, like, we want to be under the tax and everything, and, you know, he absolutely deserves to explore free agency the way he's played the last couple of years. He wants to get paid, and I guess, like, you got to respect that, but as a fan, I don't want to see him go. Thinking about it critically, though, you kind of understand him wanting to, you know, try somewhere else.
Yeah, I mean, it makes sense. We've talked about it quite a bit about, you know, the philosophy. If you've done what he's done to deserve the money he deserves, then by all means, go out and get it. If you don't want to, you know, take that pay cut to play for the Red Sox, which I don't blame you. But no, I'm with you. I don't want to see Mookie dealt, but it's one of those things where they've put a big emphasis on meeting this tax. The only penalty you get is that you have to pay money if you're over this tax. And I don't think you lose out by going over. Of course, financially, there's going to be a big whole piece about how you lose X amount of money. But if you want to win, I think you got to keep Mookie Betts around. I'm not saying that we can't do it without him. I'm just saying he helps out a whole lot in every aspect of his game. So I think it's going to show a bit about the Red Sox. If they really try to get under this tax and stand in this tax, are they just here to make money, or are they willing to be a winning organization that they can be?
I think from past experience, we know the answer to that question. Have we talked about Rick Porcello got signed with the Mets?
Yes, we did talk about that in the last episode.
We talked about that in the last episode. And then more recently, ex-Red Sox 2018 World Series champion Ian Kinsler has officially announced retirement as well.
Yes, saw that.
I say as well, like there's another person.
No, but in addition to the other news.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's pretty much it.
Yeah, we don't have not a whole lot cooking in the Red Sox.
Pay attention to the whole MLB. I know there's some exciting stuff going down for other teams. I couldn't give you specifics, but because I don't pay attention to the MLB as much, especially during the off season. But anyone who is a huge baseball fan knows that there are deals, you know, pickups, dropping trades, free agent signings, whatever it may be. But we still got a ways to go before the regular season. But spring training is creeping up on us. A couple of months.
Yep, and the regular season, I believe, is less than 100 days away. So we got that to look forward to.
Moving on from the Red Sox, let's get into the Celtics, who are coming off a good win last night against Detroit, and are now sitting at, let me double check this is correct, 19-7, which is good enough for second in the Eastern Conference, right behind the Milwaukee Bucks. The Celtics have played quite a few less games than a lot of other teams, like around them in the standings. I noticed this the other day when looking at the standings.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at it,
have played 29. We've played 26.
Yeah,
they played 29.
Raptors have played 28. Pacers with 20.
Pacers 28. Philadelphia's played 30.
Jeez, what have we been doing?
Apparently, well, they just had like a week off or whatever.
That's true.
Detroit was their first game in like 5 or 6 days. I mean, those extra games are only going to come in more helpful down the stretch, and I mean it'll even out over time. Obviously, everyone plays what are the 82 games.
82 games, yep.
Yeah, so that'll, you know, obviously everyone ends with the same amount of games, but right now, you know, there's room for us to like catch up a couple without the fear of like falling further behind type of thing. Does that make sense?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, if you also think about it, because we had that break in games, the other teams are going to have the same thing eventually as we're making up those couple of games. So that'll be a good time to, like you said, possibly get ahead, get a couple of games back in the conference, and just hopefully put us in a better position.
In more interesting news, again, referencing the game last night, Brad Stevens actually kind of hyped the Garden up when seeing how loud he could get the fans to put Taco Fall in. Taco Fall, that wasn't his NBA debut, right?
That was his Boston debut. I believe it was his first Boston game in Boston, yes.
Okay. Putting up 5 points. It's clear, like, we've barely seen him at the NBA level aside from, like, preseason, really. And the fans seem to love him.
Yeah, everyone is so for Taco Fall.
And I'm right there with him.
Yeah, I agree.
It'll be interesting to see how he develops as a player. Like, I wonder what is his ceiling type of thing? Because with the right coaching or whatever, can he get to, you know, I mean, I didn't really pay much attention to him in college. I know he was in the March Madness and whatnot. But, like, what is his limit kind of of a big man? And he is one of the biggest.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at other people of that height, the only people that come to mind are, I think Yao Ming was up there, and Ball Ball, I believe. Is it Ball Ball or Manute Ball that was?
No, Ball Ball.
Ball Ball.
Yeah, here's another. Is he on an NBA team?
No, so he's the son of Manute Ball. He plays in the G League, I believe. Because yeah, he's 20. Manute Ball was 7'7". Absolutely insane. But I remember just this one clip of him hitting, I think it was 6 3-pointers in the first half of a game. And it, first of all, looked like the most ridiculous thing. If you look at Taco Fall, can even shoot a little bit. And I've talked a little bit more about the idea of a big man being able to stretch the court, make jump shots, and be a threat from the outside. I don't know if that's what we're going to look for in Taco Fall, because I haven't seen a lot of his game. But also, if he can just, he's going to be a great rebounder. I feel like that's just a given. And if he can just body people in the paint, obviously it's hard to push around some of the guys in the NBA. But I think that he has a high ceiling. I like to think that he has a lot of potential, and we'll see. I think he, with the contract he signed, he's like allowed a certain amount of games in the NBA this season. So we'll see when he's in the NBA how he does, and then moving forward, if Brad Stevens chooses to bring him up more often, or if he kind of stays in the G League, or if he moves around after this year. I'd like to see him stay. He's a fun player to watch. It is also just kind of ridiculous looking, but I'd like to see him stay and, you know, see what he turns into, because the Celtics haven't traditionally in the last couple of years had a really tall center, and Taco Fall's just about the tallest you can find.
I'm trying to think back to like the most the previous most dominant big man we've had kind of thing. And obviously like Al Horford comes to mind, but
before that, I just think of Kevin Garnett. Yeah.
Which was almost 12 years ago now.
Yeah, but I mean, he was something else, I feel like. Like, you can't even put that on.
No, he's a Hall of Fame player.
Yeah, he just actually got nominated for the Hall of Fame a couple days ago, yeah.
All right, well, we will continue to track Taco Fall. Obviously, he's a fan favorite in Boston, and I think, you know, we'll definitely see him in a couple more games moving forward here, whether it's this week, this month, whatever, toward the end of the season. And who knows if Taco Fall, you know, continues to see some time in the NBA and he puts up the numbers, we could even see him going into the playoffs. Still a ways away, obviously, but, you know, someone we will definitely keep our eyes on.
Yeah, and moving forward, one quick thing to talk about to kind of wrap up the Celtics segment. I saw on Twitter, once again, this is where we get like a lot of the little questions that we'll kind of bring up in the show, but I saw a couple of people talking about a possible deal for Andre Drummond, and I'm not super on board with that. I'll be honest, he's a dominant rebounder, decent player in the paint from what I know, but I just don't think I'm willing to shell out the talent to get him, to get that big man. We already talked about Taco Fall. I'm on the Taco train right now. Anyways, say we were going to, like, you know, you can't change it. We're going to make a deal for Andre Drummond. Who do you feel comfortable giving up to get a talent like Andre Drummond?
See, my immediate answer is, and you literally just said I couldn't say this, I think we have a championship team already.
Yeah.
It's just a matter of those guys meshing and going on around the playoffs. Gun to my head, have to give up players for...
And that's not Andre the Drummond. Words I used, but yeah, continue. That idea. That idea. Right. Okay, well, continue.
This is tough. I see him as... he's a great rebounder, a good big man. He's a terrible shooter.
Yeah.
I remember, I think it was either last year or 2 years ago, Brad Stevens literally getting into the bonus right away in the game. Or I don't know if it's Brad Stevens or another team, actually. And then just fouling him.
Yeah.
Free throws.
Yeah.
Shooting something like 30% from the line or 40% from the line. But I see, I don't want to give up. I think the untouchable guys are obviously Smart, Tatum, and Brown, as we've spoken before.
Yeah.
I think you keep Kemba.
I agree as well. Yeah. I'm
convinced to give up Hayward just due to his, you know, his injuries and everything. But big men tend to be injury prone as well, type of thing. And that's something we talked about Hayward in the last episodes or whatever. So I guess Hayward and maybe one of our younger guys that we just drafted or another draft pick or something. I don't even know if Andre Drummond's worth that.
Yeah, I don't really think he is, like I said before, but I mean, if you have to make a deal, this was the biggest reply I saw, and I do kind of agree with this, is if you have to make a deal, send over Hayward and one of our big guys right now, like send over Hayward and Enes Kanter maybe. And then get Andre Drummond. So that kind of, I mean, I'd be willing to do that, but I don't like the idea of that deal. That being said.
Yeah, it's not something I'm a fan of. Like I said, I think we have a championship team. I legitimately do.
Yeah.
If everyone stays healthy and continues to, you know, we don't need to be the number one seed. It'd be great to have home court advantage, but I think we are capable of, you know, in a seven game series, taking down the Milwaukee Bucks, taking down the Toronto Raptors, and then, you know, anything can happen in the finals.
Yeah, but no, I do agree that I think I'm comfortable with the talent we have right now. Maybe we'll see later in the season one last piece to kind of bring it all together, but I don't think we need to be doing that right now. And honestly, once again, I agree with you. I'm comfortable with where we are at.
And that's everything we have for the Celtics today. Before we get into the other half of the TD Garden and the Bruins, let's just have a quick word from our sponsor.
All right, and coming back, we are talking about the Boston Bruins, who have just been playing horribly since the last time we recorded. I went on this long rant about how you can't be losing so many games in a row, come a playoff series that kicks you out of the playoffs. And the Bruins,
they've now lost two playoff series.
Yeah, I don't know if they've proven me right or wrong, but they've lost eight straight with 3 points in eight of those games, all of them. Those 3 points being obviously overtime losses, so...
And two overtime, one shootout.
Yeah, so two overtime, one shootout. The Bruins continue to struggle in the overtime slash shootout. Can't get a win there, so... If it's tied after 60 minutes, you might as well just put down your 1 point and walk away from the game, it seems like. But it's just frustrating. This is a team that I've watched a lot this season, and it's just been this roller coaster of winning 5, 6, 7 straight, losing 4 or 5 straight win. And I mean, in those 4 or 5 straight, you usually see them losing 1 or 2 times in overtime. So it's one of those things where if you can even get half of your overtime wins, this is a completely different story. But I think it's eight times we've now gone to overtime, and eight times that we've lost in an overtime or a shootout, and one we've won. So I believe we've only won one game in overtime. That's on a Tory Krug goal. But it's ridiculous. Just this team is so talented. And you brought up before the show that all of their losses have really only been 1 or 2 score games.
Yeah, I was gonna bring up the point that, you know, to look on the bright side type of thing, to be the glass half full type of guy, 6 of the 8 games they have lost have been 1 or 2 score games. And then again, 2 overtime losses and a shootout loss, like a different bounce, one different play is the deciding factor, or could be the deciding factor. I don't want to, like, you know, one play defines the game type of thing, but they're close games. They're not just rolling over and, you know, getting beat on. And again, you talk about we've lost 8 straight now with only securing 3 points in those 8 games. That is still good enough to have the number 2 spot in the Eastern Conference by, pardon me, let me pull it up here, by 2 points. We're still only 5 behind Washington. And we're still number 1 in the Atlantic Division. We're leading that by a couple of points, I believe. Of course, nothing is loading now. And we are still we're tied for number 2 team in the NHL. So if it had to come at a certain time, I think now is a pretty good time because we really haven't lost any ground in the standings.
Yeah, I do agree that it's better to hopefully, you know, to quote-unquote here, get it out of your system early on and just, you know, we took 8 straight losses, that sucked, but let's move on and not have it happen again. I think if you look at this, obviously, you know what happens in the playoffs, but leading up to the playoffs too, how much that probably beats on the team's morale, just everyone thinking we can't win a hockey game. So the Bruins need to turn it around for sure, but I do think they're capable of doing it. And every time they hit one of these little skids, I know that they're capable of rebounding. I know that they're capable of winning. I'd say almost every hockey game they go into, they're very capable of winning. They have the talent. They have the skill. It's just a matter of bringing it all together. And I'm going to quickly transition here. You talked about them being 1 or 2 score games. You talked about a different bounce, a different whatever. Well, Boston is the team that has actually had the most goals revoked by review. This is as of the 14th of December, so we're a little bit dated here. I haven't watched a bunch of hockey because I've been traveling a bunch, so I don't know if this has actually changed at all, but they've had 6 goals requested to be reviewed by other teams, and 5 of which have been overturned, which is leading the league in overturned goals. But you talk about that's... I know that I talked about how I'm glad the game is fair and they're catching these things, but you talk about a split second later, someone enters the zones. A lot of these are offside calls that didn't come. Someone enters the zone a second later, you still get the score. I mean, that's your 1 score difference. That's your 2 score difference, because this is happening a lot, it seems like, especially to the Bruins. But that's your difference right there. You know, you got to watch these offsides, and you got to make up those goals. You got to do something about it, which the Bruins just haven't done so far.
Yeah, and I mean, it's not going to get a whole lot easier here going forward. We do have, you know, some tough games coming up. Nashville's next. They're not playing great. We have two against Buffalo in the coming weeks. They're not statistically great, but they have been playing some good hockey at times throughout the year. And then the Capitals, obviously the number one team in the NHL. So, you know, it's not... Hopefully this doesn't continue going forward is what I want to say.
Yeah, I think you just... You'll look tonight for a win against Nashville. You kind of get your feet back under you because you're going to have a big challenge against Washington coming up on the 23rd. And then, you know, Buffalo, like you said, they haven't played incredibly, but they're a team that they have some great talent. And at this point, it just seems like any team is capable of beating the Bruins. But at the same time, the Bruins are capable of beating just about any team, I'd say. So you need to see them turn it around tonight, head into the Capitals game, you know, a little bit of confidence in you from, you know, a win, and just go from there. I would love to see them beat the Capitals because that helps out with our head-to-head score. You know, they look like the biggest challenger in the Eastern Conference moving forward. So if we can get a game back there, that's great. But, I mean, it is what it is.
Sorry. Another just statistic. We've mentioned the overtime, not great in overtime or shootouts. The Bruins are actually 0-5 in games decided by a shootout. So yeah, they haven't won in a shootout yet this year, and I think you are correct with the one overtime win.
Yeah.
Possibly a second in there somewhere.
Yeah, unless I missed one. I believe it is only the one.
Hopefully going forward, we can the Bruins can turn it around here, but that pretty much wraps up the Bruins as well. These segments are about to get a whole lot longer because I'll finally be able to watch sports as of tomorrow night at a reasonable hour, I should say. Really excited for that. And now we will get into the Patriots to kind of round out the show here. James, I know this is what you pretty much look forward to all week, considering how bleak your life is. So I'm just going to let you have this one.
Wow. All right. Well, okay. So the Patriots beat the Cincinnati Bengals 34-13. And despite the score, I would say this game we almost kind of watched together in a voice call, both streaming the game, so it froze.
If you consider both watching a very laggy stream on a call, then yes, we watched the game together.
Yeah, well, this is the closest we've got. But I would say despite the score, it wasn't as dominant a performance as you'd think it was. Tom Brady had a crazy 128 yards passing and two touchdowns, which puts him now one behind Peyton Manning for second most all time. Drew Brees passed Peyton Manning's record the last Monday, so he'll be in the lead, and at this rate, he'll at least take off with it a little bit before the end of the season. If you factor in playoff touchdowns, Brady, I believe, does have the most, but I mean, two touchdowns, no interceptions, that's good. He's not throwing the ball to the other team, but 128 yards, I think that just speaks to the struggles we have in the air. I was looking at this. If you break it down in terms of receivers, James White was our leading receiver with three receptions and 49 yards. That's how you know it's not off to a great start. Behind him...
Do you have the target numbers as well?
I do not, but if you'd like to find them, those would be good to know. Brady went 15 for 29, so he threw a lot of missed passes, which is a good point to bring up. But, I mean, the people who had the most were three receptions. Matt Lacoste also had three receptions for 22 yards. N'Keal Harry had two. Mohamed Sanu had two. Julian Edelman had two. Rex Burkhead had two. So just not a lot of receptions, not a lot of threat through the air right now, and obviously not a lot of threat on the ground. So we kind of got lucky playing a really bad Cincinnati team, but later today, hopefully this will be up before then. The Patriots are playing the Bills, who are looking really good, have one of the best defenses in the NFL, and the Patriots need to be on their A game if they want to win this. This game, not exactly for the AFC East, but could kind of decide it if a bunch of other events fall into place. But
it's a big game.
It is. It's this is the point of the season.
You lose this game, you give the Bills their first look. You give another team their first look at winning the AFC East in 12 years or 11 years or whatever it's been.
I was going to say, this is the point in the season. This is the point in the season where the Patriots have usually already clinched the division. They're playing their backups at this point because it doesn't matter.
They're playing for that one season. We're fighting for the division.
Yeah, we're fighting for the division. And if we do get the division, I believe we lock up the 2 seed. I might be misspeaking in that.
I don't know for that. The only thing I know for certain is if the Patriots beat the Bills today,
we lock up the division.
That locks up the division.
Yeah. Anyways, we'll get back to the Bengals game. Sonny Michel and Rex Burkhead, they did get it done on the ground, combining for 142 yards on 25 rushing attempts, and Rex Burkhead getting in for a career-long score of 33 yards on the ground. N'Keal Harry got his second touchdown, and he continues to look really, really good. The ball thrown to him, this is one of those moments where in a season where the Patriots have struggled offensively, and everyone's talking about Brady struggling offensively, in one of those seasons, this was one of the best throws you're going to see from Brady all season long. N'Keal Harry running. He's got two or three defenders running both directions in front and behind him. And Brady just threads the needle, puts the ball exactly where it needs to be to get N'Keal Harry the touchdown. So you see these flashes of what you know Brady can do. And I just think we need to see more of that overall moving forward. The defense was a little scary on the ground game, letting Joe Mixon walk all over them. I think Joe Mixon had 150-ish yards. 136, my bad. So couldn't really stop the run game. Joe Mixon was getting these 5, 6, 7 yard, you know, runs on first down, which was not a great look for the Patriots. But we destroyed Andy Dalton. He had 151 passing yards. One touchdown, but 4 INTs, 2 of which went to Stephon Gilmore, 1 of which he ran back for a touchdown. I mean, the special teams continues to excel. The defense, the ground game thing scares me because if you come up against a team with a good run game with a much more dominant passing game, exactly. But you look at a team that also has the receiving core to back it up because this Bengals team just doesn't. They don't have the receivers to back it up. I think you're looking at a lot closer game.
So I know this is delayed. Getting into the actual targets, though, you mentioned White with the most receptions at 3. Lacoste also had 3. White was targeted 4 times. Lacoste was 4, over half of their receptions, except for Julian Edelman, who caught 2 of 5, and Mohamed Sanu actually only catching 2 of 8 targets, which was the most. He was the most targeted receiver.
Wow. Okay. But, I mean, part of that is...
We've been talking about the receivers not being able to catch the ball. I think this game, it was kind of 50-50. It was people not being able to catch the ball and Brady not making that perfect throw.
Yeah. And, I mean, like you said, it's kind of a 50-50 thing. I was going to add in that whenever Brady throws the ball, regardless of whether it ends up in someone's hands or not, someone has to be marked down as the target because otherwise it'd be an intentional grounding call. So part of that can just be Brady throwing the ball away and you happen to be in the area, but it's not like he did that so many times that it would rack up these insane numbers. But yeah, there's a couple where he'll hit someone for an easy first down pass and it just bounces off their hands, or the throw just isn't quite where it needs to be. It's a little bit behind him. It's a little bit ahead of him. So
a little low. I saw a lot of low passes in this game. A couple stand out.
Also, some of his longer passes, it just looks like he's overthrowing guys. When he does have someone breaking down the field, it looks like he just can't get the ball where it needs to be.
I think it looks to me almost, and I kind of don't want to say this, it looks like he's almost playing it safe.
Yeah.
You know, which is smart in some cases, but we haven't seen the offense for a majority of the year, and this is a time where people really want to see it, so... take some risks. Like, if you get an interception, so what? Fire the ball in there. That N'Keal Harry touchdown was by far his best throw of the game.
Yeah.
Like you mentioned. But it looks like he's intentionally, like, putting it for sure out of reach of the defender, but that also, a lot of the time, is putting it out of reach of our receivers.
Yeah, he's not throwing a lot of what I think are commonly referred to as, like, 50-50 balls, where you just throw it up, you know that both the receiver and the defender can get to it, but you just trust that your receiver is going to come down with it.
And there, we've mentioned that so many times, trusting the receivers.
Yeah, and we've
talked about it extensively already.
We've talked about it way too much, but I think it just shows in every game where he's trying to get other people involved too, but it just seems like when he's trying to, it either he throws it off or they just don't catch it. And obviously that takes a toll on your mentality. If you're throwing it and someone keeps dropping the ball, you're not going to keep throwing it to them.
No, so I mean, hopefully, you know, best case scenario, the Bills are, you know, they have a great defense this year and they're a reputable football team. It's going to be a challenge. Best case scenario this week, we go and blow them out of the water.
Yep. I mean, that's...
You put up 30, 40 points on them, and you hold them to 3, 7, 10, even 13 points. You make a statement that, hey, we haven't looked great all year, but we are ready for the playoffs.
Yeah, and I think that's a little bit of wishful thinking. If you look back at our last game against the Bills, we won 16-10, but... I would like to see the Patriots just really show their dominance on defense and hopefully hold the Bills. But also, if they can just get their offense rolling, I'm not expecting a standout, a massive blowout against a great defense. But I'm saying if you can still run your offense and get into a shootout scenario where you're just going back and forth, score for score, and you're racking up these points against, I think it proves that you can put up numbers against a good defense, which the Patriots really haven't done. All of their wins against better, or even losses against the better teams, they haven't put up a whole lot of points. I mean, you beat Dallas 13-9, you beat the Eagles 17-10 maybe, but you're not putting up a ton of points against some of these more challenging defenses where you saw us putting up 30 to 40 points in some of the earlier games against worse defenses. But I do agree the best case scenario is you go out firing here and you rack up a lot of points. You hold the Bills and you win the AFC East. I think realistically a good goal to shoot for is just, you know, win the game, win the AFC East. But Bill Belichick's one of those coaches where he doesn't care about how many points you put up. He's going to get the lead, and he's just going to hold it. He doesn't care about getting 3 touchdowns ahead.
If he needs to run the ball game, that's what he's going to do. If he needs to go short, quick passes all game, that's what he's going to do. Like you said, he's just going to – the game plan will be whatever it takes to get it done.
Yeah, and this is always kind of how I'll wrap all of this Bengals-Bills conversation up. There's no one I trust more figuring out whatever's wrong and fixing it than Tom Brady and Bill Belichick. There's no one I'd rather, like, given the state of our team, given what we have moving forward, there's nothing I trust more than Brady and Belichick.
And that's what it comes down to all the people down in the Patriots every year, literally every year, and especially more so this year where we haven't looked as good. Down in the Patriots, whatever. If all you have to do is trust Brady and Belichick, that's what it comes down to. They're the two greatest coach and quarterback, respectively, or reverse order. I forget what order I put their names in. You get what I'm saying. And it just comes down to I trust them, and they're gonna get the job done.
Yeah, and really quick, one more thing to add in. If you look at this, I mean, the Patriots are what, 11-3. They're having a good season. If this is any other team, you're almost not having this conversation. It's just the fact that we're so used to
Baltimore, Houston, and well, who's our third loss? 49ers?
No, we lost the Chiefs, Houston, and yeah. And the Chiefs that's a game that, once again, we can get into a lot, and I won't, but.
Oh, we already did.
Yeah, I already ranted. I already got all the anger out about that one.
I can tell.
Yeah.
You're right. I mean, if this is look at the 49ers. Granted, they've looked a little bit more dominant than the Patriots have. They're sitting 11-3 and no one's, you know, they haven't, like, you know, looked that great. So just trust in Brady and Belichick, and it's the playoffs. Literally anything can happen. Or it's going to be the playoffs, rather.
Yeah. Real quick, I want to look. I mean, the Baltimore Ravens are 12-2, so they're one better than us in terms of record. But What's the difference between 11 and 3 sucking and 12 and 2 being unbeatable? Like, that bothers me a little bit, but
it's the whole dominance thing, and we've gotten into
yeah
this as well.
we've talked about that, I guess, a lot, but we'll quickly transition. I have one last little thing here. A lot of conversation has come up about Stephon Gilmore being the defensive player of the year, and first of all, him being a Patriot, I'll obviously side with that regardless, but he's put up a convincing case and a serious case to be defensive player of the year. I mean, two interceptions in the game against Andy Dalton, one of which he brings back for a score. I'm trying to bring up his 2019 season stats, but people have been running their mouth. Like, someone on the Bengals said, Gilmore was covering me. I was open all day. The guy that Gilmore was covering was like had three catches on 6 or 7 attempts for 20 yards, no touchdowns, and Gilmore had two interceptions and a touchdown. So it's kind of crazy what he's been doing. I obviously side with him, but I think it's crazy.
6 interceptions all year, 2 touchdowns. Where's tackles? Tackles, we're looking over almost 30 here. 4, 3, 4, 4, 2, 4. I mean, he's making a very convincing case. I don't know what all these numbers mean, to be honest. He's recovered a fumble. Like, he's one of those defenders that, you know, like, if you need to shut down a guy, he's man marking him.
I mean, yeah, no, that's always talked about going into a game. You look at the best receiver, and Gilmore's on him. And usually, depending on who it is, Gilmore's on him one-on-one.
Yeah, it doesn't need the double team.
Yeah, there's the trust there that he's going to get it done. Which is, I think it speaks a lot to his talent and his skill. If you can trust him going up against, you know, some of the best receivers in the league one-on-one, and you just trust that he's going to get the job done.
I wish I knew. I have his stats pulled up for the year. I just don't know what all of these stats are. Like, it says passes defended by defensive player. What is that?
I think that just means stuff.
Is that how many times he's broken up a pass, or like?
No, PBU is pass broken up. You said passes defended. Like, I think that just means how many passes were thrown to the person he was covering.
Yeah.
If I do make an assumption here.
If you've watched Patriot football this year, you know that he's having a...
Hold on. Ads are opening on my computer and playing nice and loud in the background. Thank you, ESPN, right, for ruining our show once again.
Just to keep you updated around the league, the AFC guaranteed playoff spots are Ravens, Patriots, Chiefs, Bills, NFC, Seahawks, Packers, 49ers, Saints. That means Steelers and Texans and Vikings and Cowboys, respectively, have not officially clinched. I think everything should pretty much be decided this weekend.
Yeah, we got a couple of big matchups this weekend. We have
Texans. If the Texans win, they'll clinch, I believe.
Yeah.
Vikings win, they'll clinch.
I don't think the Vikings clinch if they win this game.
Who is else in the Vikings division?
Because it's with Green Bay. So Green Bay beat the Vikings, I believe, in their first game against each other. So if the Vikings win this,
a playoff spot.
A playoff spot. I'm talking about the division. My bad.
No, I believe Vikings clinch playoff spot with a win.
They do.
Same with the Texans.
Yeah.
Steelers haven't clinched yet, but I don't know. Oh, that's because the Browns could still win out and the Steelers could lose out, probably.
Well, we all know that's not going to happen.
Yeah, so Steelers win, they've clinched playoff spot. It's that time of year. It's do or die, basically.
Yeah, I mean, it's coming down to, I think the only team we won't see clinch this weekend is Steelers, because they are playing the Ravens. So they need to beat the Ravens to clinch the game. And they need them to win a Browns loss, I believe, which I don't think you'll see this week. But I mean, that's one of those ones that'll come down to the wire in week 17, and Baker Mayfield just won't be able to do anything about it.
I mean, I'm all on board for the Titans getting in over the Texans, just because I wouldn't want to face the Texans. I'd rather face the Titans than Texans.
Yeah, it comes down to. I agree with that.
Whether that'll happen or not, I guess we will see.
Yeah.
Did you pull up what you wanted to pull up, or?
I believe so, yeah. I was just pulling up the Stephon Gilmore stats. That's
Oh,
what
okay.
was ruining our show. Well, I guess that among other things has probably ruined this show for a lot of people, but we continue on regardless. And we'll quickly get into, I think you want to transition out of sports here.
Yeah, I think we've done all we can. I just a quick apology for kind of lack of news and everything. It was James had finals week and then moved out for the semester. I had finals week. I don't think I've slept a full night in weeks, guys. If you could see me right now, thank God this is a audio-based show only, 'cause I look like hell.
Yeah, he doesn't look great. I mean that doesn't have anything to do with the sleep,
I actually
but
opened my camera and James screamed, which was weird because he doesn't scream.
no. But yeah, so we'll transition out of sports into who knows what the rest of this show has become. life, randomness, stories, who knows? So we're gonna. Do you actually have anything to talk about?
No, I've been kind of in like a little depression upheaval
Oh,
week as
uh-oh.
I've had
That's
two
no, I
sayings.
don't know. That's not good.
No, we're not doing that.
No, we can. It's just I feel bad for you.
It's just, I have just been having to say goodbye to friends I've met at study abroad. It's been very, very difficult, emotional, but at the end of the day, I will be happy to be home, and you know, I will see these people again in the future. So that's kind of where I'm at. And then the whole finals thing, I've just been basically refreshing my final grades, like, where are we at?
No, I understand that feeling. Well, if you don't have anything to talk about, this is something that we originally didn't even think we were going to do this last segment of the show until about 5 minutes before this recording started, when Nicholas and I were having a nice conversation about what to get for someone for Christmas. So, a couple weeks ago, I think it was about two, no,
No,
last
1 week
week,
ago,
1 week
literally
ago,
last weekend.
last weekend. All right. I texted Nicholas for a gift idea for someone, and I said, "Hey, let's get him Red Sox tickets." Nicholas texts back, "Perfect. Where are the tickets? How much they cost?" I gave him all that information. Says, "Go for it." I buy the tickets. Done deal. And today, before we're recording the show, Nicholas asked me what we were getting said person for Christmas, and I thought he was joking at this point. He just goes, "Oh, we should get him something like Red Sox tickets or something." And I'm like, "Oh, that's good." And he goes, "Oh, what do you mean?" I go, "I already bought Red Sox tickets for this person." And I thought he was joking at first. You were not joking.
No, I did not remember agreeing to buy Red Sox tickets.
No. So, yeah, Nicholas just had no. So I read him back probably five or six text messages that I can probably go find right now. And just.
They were not that long ago.
No. But I mean,
I'm
they
genuinely
were.
astounded that I don't remember this, because I remember the com we had we continued the conversation afterwards about something else, and I remember doing that. So
Yeah.
don't really know where I was at, guys.
So this is at 5:53 p.m. for me. So that's what, 11 o'clock for
Keep in
you?
mind that's like midnight here.
Okay. So, yo, would you split Red Sox tickets with me? I'm down. How much and when? I tell him how much. Tell him the date. He says, perfect. Do it. And I said, okay. And then you said, make sure we got everything lined up. I tell you where the seats are. You say, perfect. I'm in. I reply, done, to which Nicholas says, okay, we settle when I get back. So Nicholas completely agreed to buying Red Sox tickets without remembering it now. So that's been the only really exciting thing that's happened.
There are worse things you could buy
That's true.
or agree to buy. Yeah,
Yeah,
that's
but just an unfortunate look for Nicholas. Not a great look, but luckily it works out for you, works out for me.
it does.
Yeah,
We're doing
but
all
it's
right.
just one of those funny things. I don't know. That's all that's really happened. I've spent so much of my time either studying or in a car in the last week that's really been the only exciting and noteworthy thing. And luckily it popped up right before the show started, so we got to talk about it a little bit, but I think that's about it.
Yeah, I have nothing. I've got a flight in 15 hours.
All right. Well, I got a
Then I'm
car
back.
ride in however many hours to go pick you up. So,
I'm back stateside, baby.
oh yeah. All right, that is going to do it for this episode of the Brady Bros Boston Sports Podcast. If you did enjoy it, be sure to leave a rating, leave a comment, let us know how we are doing, and also make sure to subscribe on whatever platform you're on. That way you get the show every single week or whenever we upload it, and it will just show up on your phone. You don't have to go looking for us. It just is there. It makes it easy. Subscribe on whatever platform you use. Instagram, at Brady Bros Boston. YouTube, I talked about this last week, but make sure you check out the YouTube. And by check out, I mean subscribe to, because there will be stuff coming. Twitters. What's your Twitter?
My Twitter, sorry, I had to scroll way the heck down. Brady Bros, Nick.
Mine is, if I can remember this, James_B_Boston. Let's go. I got it. Round of applause. We got it. So follow us on those things. I definitely use Twitter a lot and talk a lot of trash and put my thoughts out there, which I'm not really sure if I should be allowed to do, but I do it anyways. Follow me on Twitter. That's where I also post about every time we upload the show, and then I post a reminder a couple days later if you hadn't seen it, if it hadn't popped up for you. So make sure to check out Twitter if you want to turn on like reminders for my tweets, so you see when I tweet out the links for the episode, whatever. Follow us on those things. We got a lot of stuff in the mind. We got ideas.
I've been saying this for weeks, like we got plans. Those plans will actually get set in motion once we're within 1,000 miles of each other.
Yeah. So once you show up, that's when we can actually execute all of these plans. So hopefully by the next podcast, which will be sometime probably late next week, because the middle of the week is Christmas and the holidays and everything, so we'll be pretty tied up for time. But I would say later in the week, like a Thursday, Friday, we will probably have some time, record a podcast. So hopefully by then we'll have...
It'll probably be more like Friday or Saturday, actually.
Yeah, we'll probably have...
Sounded like we have a busy week.
Some stuff to back up what we've been saying all these weeks. Because we'll actually be together again and be able to do stuff.
It's going to be fun. Again, thank you guys so much for listening. We really do appreciate it. Quality of this show is about to get a huge bump up when I get home.
Yep.
And I couldn't be more excited.
This is the last episode of really terrible internet connection.
Really terrible. Literally 3 times in the 20 minutes before we started recording, my internet dropped. And I was to the point where I was like, James, can we just like record when I get home? Like, it'll be so much easier. But we got through it without the internet dropping. Thank you guys so much for listening. I will be back soon. We will be back next week. See ya.